The headline in U.S. News and World Report yesterday, Poll Watch, McCain gains on Obama, buoyed by crisis in Georgia. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 21st. We will talk this hour about how the Russia-Georgia conflict is affecting the U.S. presidential race. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you have a question or comment for our guest political analyst. In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dennis Riley is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and he joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So it looks like McCain is benefiting. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but benefiting from a war in Georgia and this invasion of Georgia by Russia?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not quite ready to swallow the U.S. News and World Report headline whole, but there's not much question that it does have an impact in this sense. This really fits John McCain's view of the Russians. It fits John McCain's view of the world, that the Russians are a very dangerous set of people, no different than the Soviets. Putin could be Brezhnev as far as he's concerned. And so now that's been confirmed in a way, and I think he thinks there's a lot of underlying American sentiment that will say, hey, wait a minute, it really is that way, and they really are dangerous people, and McCain has been right to say that so often of late. I mean, he's got all kinds of things he wants to do, push the Russians out of the G8, keep them out of the World Trade Organization, and he was saying that long before they went into Georgia. So he feels that he's been vindicated, and he will take that as an opening. And I suspect, in particular, as an opening to say, since Russia is behaving more or less as the Soviets did for half a century, we need the kind of leadership that stared them down the first time. And I can see the commercial then cutting to a picture of Ronald Reagan saying, tear down this wall,
yeah,
and then back to a picture of John McCain. It's the kind of steady, determined leadership that we need in this dangerous world. And, you know, Senator Obama's vulnerability, at least as far as the McCain campaign is concerned, is his national security, foreign policy credentials, his lack of experience. And so, I think that they will try to use this to play up a difference that they believe is pretty significant already.
Yeah. You know, forgive me for being on vacation when this conflict arose. Help us understand what is going on. Right now, Russia says, yeah, we're going to pull out, but people are speculating that they're really not.
Yeah. Well, this conflict, between Russia and Georgia, Russia has, since the days of the Tsars, has not been very happy about the idea that their western border would be unprotected from Western Europe, that they want buffer states that essentially belong to them where they can station troops, do whatever they want. They had it during the Soviet era. They lost it with the breakup of the Soviet Union, and they're very unhappy about our efforts, American particularly, but other efforts to extend the protection of NATO to some of these former Soviet republics. And so there's been a lot of blustering talk from both sides about the importance of those questions. There, those two little regions of Georgia, I can't even keep the name straight, South Ossetia and Ozkan or Abkhan, I don't know, anyway, whatever it is, those have a number of ethnic Russians, and a few months ago, those ethnic Russians began to get Russian passports, which conferred upon them Russian citizenship, and a lot of people began to get very nervous about Putin's intentions when they found that out, because, as the Swedish foreign minister said, it's very much what Hitler did in the Sudetenland, in Czechoslovakia. So, scary. Well, anyway, then the Georgian president moved into South Ossetia and began to shell areas, actually to bombard them with artillery, and the Russians responded to that. So who's to blame? Us for pushing too hard, the Russians for pushing back too hard, the Georgians for pushing too hard. I mean, everybody made their own mistakes in the dance, and we ended up with people shooting at each other. And the Georgians just simply don't have the military capacity to resist the Russians in that sort of situation. So we ended up just kind of dancing down a road ending up with people shooting at each other. What will the Russians do? They will withdraw to some extent, but they will beef up what they already had. They already had forces in South Ossetia, and they're going to beef that up and make it pretty difficult for Georgia to retain control of those areas.
And meanwhile, a potential vice presidential running mate for Barack Obama, Joe Biden, goes to Georgia, as does Joe Lieberman, a potential vice presidential running mate of John McCain's, is in Georgia.
Right. Everybody understands that this could be a major event, at least for the next few weeks. And although it's always hard to take an event in August and project how it will affect a vote in November, you have to play the game one day at a time, and right now that's a major sort of thing, and so we need to be prepared to discuss it and all that. So I suppose both campaigns want somebody over there so that they have the show of concern and interest, and you send somebody that you think might be an expert in it, I guess, at least certainly on Barack Obama's part.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of callers for you, Professor Riley, and we'll get to them after we check the weather. We are talking about how the Georgia-Russia conflict will affect the U.S. presidential race. It has some voters considering how the candidates would fare if they were commander-in-chief. We wonder if you wonder that, too. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 21st. Coming up this afternoon, Gene Purcell in for Ben Marins, talking with his guest after 5 o'clock about a new initiative to lower the drinking age to help stop binge drinking. Gene Purcell in for Ben Marins will be talking with the director of the group Choose Responsibility, which has gotten a bunch of college presidents to sign on to a letter asking that the drinking age be lowered. That's coming up after 5 today. Right now, we're talking about Georgia, Russia, and the presidential candidates. And let's go to the phones for our guest, Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. Stephen in Madison joins us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, Professor. The whole thing seems a little too clever by half. Talk about Shoneman, the McCain advisor lobbyist, and also what about the 2,000 U.S. military who've been building the Georgia forces for some 10 years or so? The whole thing seems to be a clever ruse to create a little crisis in time for November, benefiting the Republicans. It just seems to be another little small 9/11 type pretext situation. Thanks so much for the conversation.
Well, what do you make of that?
Well, I've actually seen some of Stephen's comments elsewhere. There are people who said instantly that they thought this might have been manufactured by us. I tend not to think that's the case, but I do tend to think it's the case that some of our foreign policy decisions to push so hard to bring Georgia into NATO as early as we possibly could, to press to press the Russians with the missile defense system, the deal we signed yesterday with Poland, that we're pushing on the Ukraine. I mean, there are all sorts of things that we have done that have set the stage, and then we do have to remember that Putin was in fact with the KGB under the Soviet regime. I mean, he's not somebody who was one of the democratic protesters all along. He was part of the establishment. And so we did some things that provoked. The Georgian president did some things that provoked. Everybody appeared to be dancing towards some kind of confrontation, whether they knew it or not. And I think certainly Putin knew it and wanted it, as a matter of fact. Whether we wanted it, that's another question. I'm not so entirely sure. Because in a way, it exposes one of our fundamental weaknesses. There's really not much we can do if Russia begins to act in an expansionist Soviet sort of way. There's really very few levers we can pull in the world right now to do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a caller to an open line I held earlier this week who wanted me to do a program on why was Karl Rove in Georgia recently. Is that along the same lines as our caller thinking that Rove was there stirring the pot?
Well, I suppose, because I have no idea what the former political advisor to the president is doing in a particular country, in any spot except his home or some vacation spot. And Georgia is not a vacation spot. So I don't know why he was there. I think that's an interesting question. And those are the kinds of things that do make people start to think along the lines that Stephen does, that, wait a minute here, this just has too many loose ends to be a complete accident, you know.
Louis in Waukesha is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. My first observation, my first thought when this thing broke was that McCain welcomed this situation. He came out sounding like Bush of old, ready, good American blood and guts. Come on, you guys, let's take him. Whereas Obama came out more thoughtful, more measured, and I would just encourage my fellow burghers not to confuse time spent in military with intelligence.
Yeah, Louis, I'm sorry, what did you say? My fellow what?
My fellow burghers. Like,
with an H in the middle.
Okay.
Wisconsinites, okay? I trust are listening.
All right, good, thank you. Yeah, Professor Riley?
Well, again, as I said in the opening, this really had to confirm John McCain's view of the Russians and of why certain kinds of leadership is necessary. It may have also confirmed Barack Obama's view that what you need is thoughtful and careful leadership and not somebody who's going to say, here we are again, and we must react in a certain sort of way. And it is sort of, you know, intriguing, certainly for older folks like myself. It was 40 years ago, almost to the day, you know, it was 40 years ago yesterday, so a little bit. Mm-hmm. A little bit off, that the Soviets moved into Czechoslovakia to take over from a communist government that they thought was leaning too far toward democratization. So it's just distinctly, you know, you never know these things. But in that time when they went into Czechoslovakia, it's said, I don't know if it's true or not, it might be apocryphal, that the happiest people on the planet were the Richard Nixon campaign staff. Yeah. Because they believed that would finish the Democrats at that particular point. And again, it was the same sort of situation. In that sense, we were in a war that looked to be stagnating. Now, maybe John McCain doesn't believe that, but looked that there wasn't going to be a quick exit, and that tied us up. And we had a president who was sinking like a stone in the public opinion polls, Lyndon Johnson. So, I mean, in some sense, I think Putin felt that he could really do what he wanted to do pretty much with impunity. There was almost nothing the Americans could do to respond to him.
Yeah. Tell us how the candidates have reacted or what they're saying should be done now.
Well, McCain is just going back to some things that he has said all along. Throw the Russians out of the G8, the big conglomerate of wealthy industrialized nations, or industrialized nations anyway, that meets episodically. Toss them out of that. Keep them out of the World Trade Organization. In other words, keep them as isolated as you can. And I don't think McCain has suggested any military responses yet, because he does realize that we have no military option in that context. But he's not talking about sitting down with them and continuing the dialogue. He's essentially saying, well, we need to isolate them. A while back, about 6 months ago, he was talking about creating something called the League of Democracies, which would bring together certain sets of democratic states and then put pressure not just on Russia, but on other non-democratic countries around the world, including China. So he has an interesting view. I may not share it, or I may share it, but he has an interesting view, and this is his opportunity to really put that front and center, and he's been doing so. Obama, you know, his sort of foreign policy narrative is essentially like the rest of his narrative. He's careful, thoughtful. He's not going to respond right away to much of anything. He's going to think it through. He's going to talk to the right people, and then he's going to come forward with a more subtle and nuanced response. That's a good narrative, but it isn't quite as catchy as the narrative that goes back and says, "These are this is just the same world that it was 30 years ago, and we have to react in the same ways."
Yeah, you know, we touched on this briefly earlier, but a number of other stories are saying that this Georgia-Russia conflict changes everything when it comes to Barack Obama's choice for a vice presidential running mate. And while Joe Biden was always on the short list, he seemed to go to the very top of that short list just because of this. Do you think that is going to play a big part in his selection?
Well, I don't think he can ignore it in the sense that he has to appear to understand that this is a crisis of fairly significant magnitude. And that it just portends something. It's not just it's not exclusively Georgia, but it portends the possibility of the same sorts of things happening in the Ukraine. The Russians coming across and saying, "Look, we have to have Crimea back because that's where one of our fleets is stationed. So we're just going to take that over, and it was always ours anyway." And so you start thinking of those kinds of things. There has to be a response now. Obama's got kind of a dilemma because he needs to show that he understands the importance of these kinds of issues and that the president sits not just as the commander-in-chief but as what we call in political science the chief diplomat, the person who decides how we're going to relate to countries without using our military. And so he knows he's got to show that he has credentials there and that he has a team put together there. On the other hand, if he overemphasizes that, he just calls attention to the fact that his own experience in that area is limited. So if he says, "This is who I've got," he may not be saying that, but other people will quickly say he had to do that because he doesn't have the experience himself.
Kevin in Fort Wayne, hi, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I'd like to ask your guests if Russia is so spread out with old satellite states. They're still at war with Chechnya. Their military is underfunded and underarmed. They had a big expose in the New York Times saying that the Russian troops are fighting with equipment very much similar to what our military is going through. It's beat up. It's old. They're using tanks that are out of shape. And because they're spread out over almost their whole border, they're in conflict with all their old satellite states. And I think that Mr. Obama and Mr. McCain, Russia, they have their own problems, believe me, internally and on the border. Do we really have to concern ourselves? And one thing to remember in this Russian-Georgia thing, those Ossetia and those other cities, they want to be Russian. They don't want to be Georgian. They want to be Russian. And that's why the conflict is really at hand. I'd like to have a response on that.
We only have a minute before our news break, Professor.
Okay, well, quickly, there's two things. Yes, the South Ossetia in particular, and the other as well, they want to be Russian. They feel Russian, many of them. Some don't. Those are mixed places. The Russians are weak, but not as weak as they were. As long as oil sells for as much as it does, and as long as they control the flow of a lot of the oil to Western Europe and a lot of the natural gas to Western Europe, they are going to be able to rebuild that military. And if it may be a depleted military, but they're taking on the Georgian military, which is not exactly the best equipped on the planet either. And they don't feel they'll ever have to confront our military fighting over Georgia or South Ossetia or any of the rest of that.
We will continue talking about how the Russia-Georgia conflict is playing into the U.S. presidential race and possibly the pick for vice president as well as we talk with Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point, after we check the latest news from NPR. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's now 7:36 on this Thursday, August the 21st. Talking with my guest political analyst this hour about how the Georgia-Russia conflict is influencing the presidential race and the search for the right VP. Welcoming your thoughts and questions for Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Professor Riley, I started the hour citing the USA Today headline about the polls. Here's one from this morning in the Wall Street Journal. Senator John McCain has all but closed the gap with Senator Barack Obama, underscoring how international crises and some well-placed negative ads have boosted the prospects of the Republican presidential candidate. Says goes on to say that the poll finds the race in a statistical dead heat. 45% favoring Obama, 42% McCain, but that advantage is down for Obama and well within the margin of error. So I think it's not maybe just the Georgia-Russia conflict, but some well-placed negative ads as well?
Well, I think, yeah, you'd have to say that, and Senator Obama has certainly responded in kind now. Not quite in kind, I don't think, but close.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I saw ads for each of the candidates back-to-back, the only time Obama was mentioned in his own ad was when he said, "I'm Barack Obama and I approve this ad." And the only mention of McCain in his ad was the same thing. The tag, "I'm John McCain, I approve this ad." Otherwise, the ad focused exclusively on the other person. And that isn't necessarily negative, I guess, but it certainly indicates that you want to say more about your opponent than you do about yourself. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's an increasing storyline that you see that the election is going to turn into a referendum, not on the last 8 years, but on whether Barack Obama is ready to be president of the United States. And that's certainly the territory John McCain wants to compete on.
Right. Kyle in Lake Geneva, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. My comment is just in regards to John McCain. Mr. McCain is a child of the Cold War, if you will. And frankly, I think the only thing that could come of a McCain presidency is a return to the confrontational and paranoid mindset that we experienced during the Cold War years, which I can't blame McCain for because that's all he knows. That was a very long time in American history. But I would urge people who feel more comfortable with John McCain dealing with this problem that it is not a wise idea to take on a mindset of the past to deal with problems of the future. And I would say that we don't need a second Cold War. We don't need confrontation and aggression towards Russia. We need diplomacy, and we need conversation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Kyle. Are we headed toward another Cold War, Professor Riley?
Well, there are a number of folks who have written about John McCain in precisely that vein. And I mean some pretty serious journalists and others who've written about him, that he does have a the Cold War might be stretching it a little bit, but in some sense a Cold War mentality, and it's understandable. I mean, he's a little older than I am, and I certainly remember things as silly as duck and cover drills.
Right.
So I know what it felt like, and I know what it felt like in 1968 when the Soviet tanks rolled in to Czechoslovakia, and the air was sort of taken out of those of us who wanted to believe in negotiation, wanted to believe in diplomacy, wanted to believe that the world was a nice place where people could make sense out of other people rather than shoot at them. And so it really did. But I think we also have to remind ourselves in terms of the polling numbers that when the Soviets moved into Czechoslovakia, Richard Nixon took, at that point, almost a 20-point lead on Hubert Humphrey. But that was one of the closest elections in American history. So what happens in August, it affects November, but it doesn't necessarily determine November. So we'll see if people are still thinking about this and thinking that's such an important thing, or if they're back to focusing their attention on the economic woes of the country and other sorts of things. So we'll just have to see how that plays out.
Next, we go to Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. Good morning to your guests. I'm a pull support for Obama because I believe he'll have a more level-headed approach because McCain has shown he's on the war hawk's side. Now, I have a point about what's going on in Russia and Georgia. Now, I'm in no way in support of what the Russians are doing, but let's put it in perspective. NATO bombed Serbia because they were bullying Kosovo, and Kosovo didn't want anything to do with the Serbians. So in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, it's the same situation. You know, Russia is doing what the United States and NATO were doing. It's power play. So, and another thing, too, someone from the State Department warned the Georgians not to provoke the Russians. And look what they did, and look at the mess they're in. So they are big blame for what's happening over there. So I have some faith in Obama, more methodical. He's new age thinking. McCain, just like what Kyle reiterated, he's a Cold War mentality. So my support is with Obama. I'm not even worried about the experience excuse, because you cannot experience it unless you're actually in it. Neither one of them have been presidents, but I have more faith in Obama.
All right. Thanks, Victor. Comments, Professor Riley?
Yeah, Victor made a couple of very good points that we all sort of ought to keep in mind, I think. Nobody's, you know, the only person who's been president recently is George Bush, and he's not running for re-election because he can't.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to realize that experience in the Senate, experience flying airplanes, experience commanding men flying airplanes, it's all important. It shapes who you are and how you're going to look at things, but it's not being president and making those decisions. So we're choosing between two people who've never been there. So experience is perhaps less important. At least one can make that case, I think. Also, though, another very good point, NATO is a military alliance. It was set up for one purpose and one purpose only, to tell the Soviet Union, if you try to cross line X, we'll blow you up. Well, I'm not sure that anybody in the Russian military or political establishment forgets that. So when they see NATO getting within, you know, 100 miles of their own border, they get very nervous, and they may be every bit as paranoid as Kyle was suggesting John McCain is, and have the same kind of thinking. And they want that buffer. The Tsars wanted that buffer. Don't let Europe, free Europe or any other kind of Europe, get too close to our doors. We are different. And so they've taken provocative actions. The Georgians certainly took provocative actions prior to that, and Victor's right, the U.S. State Department did ask as late as, you know, 2 in the morning before the first shells were fired in South Ossetia, please don't do this. Please don't do this. But the Georgian president went ahead and did it anyway, and so, you know, we can start laying blame at a lot of doorsteps for this.
We're talking with Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point, about the Russia-Georgia conflict and how that is affecting the presidential election and U.S. politics. We welcome your thoughts, your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Some recent polling in the presidential race suggests that this conflict is helping John McCain as he's gaining on, or even in some polls, overtaking Barack Obama. Tomorrow, by the way, during this hour, we will do a candidates forum. We will talk with two candidates running for Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district, two libertarians. Ben Olson joins us between 7 and 7:30 tomorrow, and Kevin Barrett joins us between 7:30 and 8 tomorrow. These two libertarians are facing off in the primary in September to go on to the general election to try to challenge Ron Kind, the incumbent U.S. representative from the 3rd Congressional District. So that's tomorrow between 7 and 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 14 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 21st. After 8, I'll welcome in the author of the book Lake Effect, Two Sisters and a Town's Toxic Legacy, about two sisters who grew up in Waukegan, Illinois. The author trying to find out if her cancer and the cancer of her sister is connected to the pollution that was in Waukegan, Illinois. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Back to the phones now for Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point. Arthur and Mosini, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, professor. I think a lot of what will depend on what we're going to do is that we are a signatory to the NATO treaty. And as you know, all treaties supersede the Constitution and all federal laws. The Supreme Court said so. And therefore, if NATO votes or chooses to go in fighting, we have to go. Congress can't stop it. It doesn't even go by Congress. The same thing happened in Vietnam with the CETO treaty, although they didn't hardly ever mention that. But that's the problem. If we were not a signatory to the NATO treaty, then we might have some wiggle room there, but we don't because we're a member of NATO.
Well, that's true, but first of all, Georgia is not a member of NATO yet, so what they call the Three Musketeers provision of the NATO treaty doesn't really apply because Georgia is not a NATO member. Second, I think it's probably pretty unlikely that the French and the Italians and all kinds of other people are going to vote to start marching across or start bombing Moscow. You know, so I think we're not going to be asked to go in and do that, I don't believe. But it's clearly still an important point to note that Arthur notes here. There is the treaty. We have extended NATO membership farther and farther toward the Russian border. And the Russians are trying to suggest back, I think, hey, look, we know what that says, and we know that you are committing yourselves to attack us militarily if we go into there militarily, and we don't particularly want you to do that. So this is what you might be confronting someday. Soviet troops, maybe not as well armed as they used to be, and maybe with older equipment, but this is what you're going to be confronting, or could be, if you don't allow us to settle some disputes in what we still consider to be greater Russia.
Next, we go to Dave in Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
John McCain has Randy Schuneman as a top lobbyist for Georgia. And before all this conflict happened, McCain was almost poking and prodding Georgia. We're behind you, giving him the rah-rah talk to stand up, and we're going to be behind you. You know, it reminded me of George Bush Sr. before the Kurds, you know, and telling them to stand up, and then we weren't there for them. And I truly believe they were hoping something could happen to try to distract the McCain campaign, try to distract and really pounce on it, to use as an opportunity to try to make their candidate look more presidential. In my point of view, and I've got a skewed point of view, and it just seems to me that it was just rolled out to affect the election coming up.
Yeah, and we did to discuss this in our first half hour to some extent, Dave. So do you think, what, is Obama not reacting properly, or is there really a gap in Obama's resume that that this highlights?
No, I just think we have some very unintelligent people here that just want to pound sledgehammers without using their mind, to think things through. You know, McCain pounced right away, we're going to kick Russia out. But, you know, of course, now as days go by, we find out, you know, Georgia did a bunch of things to entice this. So McCain's reaction, of course, was completely asinine. And Obama said, let's take a breath. Let's see what's going on here. Let's let the dust settle a little bit and figure out what we're going to do. Now, to me, there's only one intelligent guy, you know, coming up with an answer.
So is the dust settling, Professor Riley?
Well, sure, it's settling in the sense that I don't think anybody's shooting at anybody else in the middle of the night right now. Mm-hmm. But it's not settling in terms of us, the U.S. and Western Europe, getting the Russians to do exactly what we want them to do. There's still a lot of Russian equipment and a lot of Russian personnel. And there were some before, there's a lot more now, and I think there's a serious question as to whether that troop level and equipment level will be reduced back to what it was. That's the goal of Western Europe. There's been a Russian presence in South Ossetia for a while anyway, for, quote, peacekeeping reasons. But, you know, it's much greater now, and it doesn't show very much sign of receding to the point that it goes back to where it was. And that's our goal, and I don't know exactly how we accomplish it. We'll probably engage in some diplomatic things. But we're in a tough spot in the sense that we have, for reasons of our Constitution, we have a president who will not be in office in January. And everyone knows that, including Putin, so he doesn't feel he has to be terribly responsive to the Bush diplomatic team or offensive right now, because that won't last much longer. And he also can read public opinion polls, and whatever this may be doing for John McCain and Barack Obama,
there hasn't been some big bump for George Bush. He still remains in the low 30s and still is referred to by John Stewart as still President Bush every time he puts his picture on the screen.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we're in a very tough spot that our Constitution imposes on us every 8 years if a president lasts that long.
Yeah. You pointed out to us an article in The Economist. The headline of that is, "The War in Georgia is a Victory for Russia. The West's options are limited, but it needs to pursue them firmly." So what are the West's options now, and what do you expect to see happen?
They aren't very much. I mean, clearly there can be some diplomatic effort. One of the things that The Economist suggested was that there's a separate group called the G7 that Russia isn't a part of. They're part of the G8. It was expanded out of the G7. Put more emphasis on the G7. Don't hold meetings of the G8. Do keep them out of the World Trade Organization, because the Russians would like to be in that. And to try to play at least as much as you can on the fact that the Russians are at least somewhat sensitive to international opinion. Not as much as we'd like, but somewhat. But there's not much that can be done in terms of military pressure. That's just off the table, I think. Consequently, you have to use those things. Can you use economic sanctions? It's very hard to use economic sanctions against the folks that are supplying your oil. I mean, we did it against Iraq for a long period of time, but Iraq didn't supply as much in some ways as Russia is now supplying across those pipelines into Western Europe. So Western Europe isn't as excited, and Western Europe has never been really as excited about confronting the Russians, whether the Soviets or Russians, as excited as Americans have been about doing the confrontation, because World Wars I and II were fought on European soil. And they're not very excited about the possibility of any sort of land war. They like the protection, but economically they're too integrated with the Russians to just cut it off that way.
An email from John in Park Falls. "I am in communication with friends in Central Asia, people who are not pro-Russian, as the Russians have invaded and occupied most of those nations during the past and recent history. But the general attitude regarding the situation in Georgia is that they are simply puppets for the United States. They believe that Georgia's president," I can't pronounce his name, "would never have gotten tough with South Ossetia if the Bush administration were not pushing them. For whatever reason, I can't imagine."
Well, pushing, I don't know, but certainly encouraging. I mean, the Bush administration has, the Clinton administration pushed pretty hard to expand the so-called NATO umbrella. I mean, we were doing that in the 90s. The Russians, right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, had a weak economy, a weak political system, all kinds. It had difficulties that we thought were something couldn't be overcome. So, as some commentators have been saying, we sort of put our foot on the Russian throat and stepped down a little hard. Now, oil and what's happened in the oil business has brought the Russians back. Putin has brought the Russians back in the sense that he can act like the old Soviet Union in his own eyes, and people will support him, and they have. So he feels confident. So they were ready to do what they were doing. I don't know if we pushed, but we certainly encouraged every former Soviet satellite republic, every one of them. If you clean up your act and move toward market economies and two or three other things that you can do down the road, we will give you the protection of NATO. And there's a set of historians who have argued for a long time that that's precisely what we did with the Hungarians in 1956 and then didn't come through for them. With the Czechs in 68, and then didn't come through for them, and certainly, as suggested, with the Kurds in Iraq and around 1990, before the Iraq War, that we didn't really help any of the folks that we encouraged to stand up to somebody that we didn't like, and then when push came to shove, we let them get shoved over, and that this may be exactly what ends up happening to the Georgians, and that Shakashvili, I think, is how they pronounce it, but I'm not 100%
yeah,
certain.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But, that certainly his political days are numbered, and that he'll be thrown out, and that
South Ossetia will become even more independent than it was. And Abkhazia, thank you, Victor, with the one I can never remember, has also, you know, will also be even more independent than it was. And so we'll sort of go into a state in which Georgia is kind of partitioned and politically weakened drastically and understands that Russia might step in at any time. And is the Ukraine now going to feel threatened? All these other folks going to feel threatened. So there's been a huge shift probably toward what really was the reality of the world, that we weren't as powerful there as we thought we were. The Russians weren't as weak as we thought they were. But they took the opportunity in early August to show us exactly how that balance of power.
So, Dennis Riley, do you have in our remaining minute, less than a minute, a prediction? Who do you think Barack Obama is going to pick as his VP?
Oh, boy. I really don't know. I think Joe Biden is a pretty good choice, though he's also a pretty good choice for Secretary of State, and mm-hmm. he certainly doesn't deal with the change image. But now, can you pick Tim Kaine in the midst of an international crisis? He has no more experience than Barack Obama does.
Yeah. Could he pick Hillary Clinton?
I really don't think so, because I think there's the fear of how do you control Bill Clinton.
Well, we will see, won't we?
All right. Sure will.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks again, Joy.
Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point. Oh, I forgot to ask Professor Riley. Maybe he's still listening. We're going to be in Stevens Point for our remote on October the 24th. Yeah, we'll be broadcasting, I think, from the UW Student Union, the Lee Dreyfus Center, on October the 24th from 6 until 9, and I hope that we can convince Professor Riley to be on hand for that live remote. More on that will be on our website soon, I'm sure. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and Michelle Kofel for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.